Hello, and welcome to Animal Talk. In the weeks leading up to the 2017 legislative session, Animal Talk will mainly focus on animal issues taking place in New Mexico. Today, we learn about the practice of wildlife trapping in New Mexico, the policy and politics that has allowed trapping to continue, and what New Mexicans opposed to trapping can do to help end this most cruel and backward practice. Today's guests are Jessica Johnson, Chief Legislative Officer for Animal Protection Voters and Animal Protection of New Mexico, and Mary Catherine Ray, Wildlife Chair of the Rio Grande Chapter of the Sierra Club. Welcome, Jessica and Mary Catherine, to Animal Talk.
Thank you, Jenny. It's great to be here with you today.
So, as trapping mostly takes place unobserved by New Mexicans, let's start with a story or two of people who have themselves or their companion animals been injured by traps. Jessica, can you share anything about that?
Sure. Well, the latest incident that I heard of happened just a few weekends ago. A gentleman and his dog were hiking on public lands around the trailhead. And just off the trail, the dog was exploring and got caught in a trap. Got his leg caught. His name was Cub. And he ended up recovering okay. But the following day, this gentleman brought a news reporter and cameraman to the scene and was showing and demonstrating where the trap was that caught his dog. And as he was pointing and to the ground and touching the leaves and the dirt in that area, a trap snapped on his hand. I don't know if it was the same trap that had been reset since the previous day or if it was a new trap. But stories like this, they happen all the time. We hear it all the time about hikers and their dogs having trap experiences themselves.
Mary Catherine, what do these kind of stories, such as that which Jessica just shared, what does that reflect about the problem of the problems associated with trapping in New Mexico?
It certainly highlights the fact that traps don't really know to their targets, that they are completely indiscriminate. And we often say that traps are a danger to any animal whose feet touch the ground. They not only catch the animals that the trapper wants because they have commercial value, like bobcats and foxes and coyotes, but they catch our dogs, they catch birds, squirrels, rabbits, even deer, larger animals. They don't discriminate.
Are the trappers who have been whose traps were associated with human injuries or injuries to companion animals, have they ever been identified and prosecuted?
The answer to that is no. Well, sometimes the trapper can't be found. In this recent case, the traps were not marked. Trappers are legally required to mark their traps with their name or an identifying number, and that's a frequent infraction that they don't actually mark them. So sometimes you can't even find who the trapper was. But even if they are marked, if they're following the law, which has been set by the state of New Mexico, wildlife policy by New Mexico Game and Fish, they're not held liable. They're liable. They're doing what they're legally allowed to do. So if they hurt another person, too bad. The public is not protected from this.
So Jessica, what do we know about how many trappers there are in New Mexico and how many traps or snares are actually laid out on public lands?
Oh, I think there are just a few thousand trappers in the state. Is that right, Mary Catherine?
It is. It varies depending on the price of pelts, because that's what drives this. And pelt prices, happily right now, are lower than average. So I do have the figure for last winter, the 2015-16 winter. Only 1,600 people bought a trapping license. It has been as high as slightly over 2,000, but it's still not a lot of people. However, I need to add the caveat that if you want to trap for a coyote, you don't need a license. And so we really don't have a complete picture of coyotes are one of the most trapped species, so we don't really know completely how many trappers there are.
Is there a restriction on how many traps any one trapper can lay?
The only restriction is, by law, he's supposed to check all of his traps every day. That's really hard to enforce because no one's really watching over his shoulder. but that would be the only thing.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about even just 2,000 trappers with an unlimited number of traps per trapper, we're talking about a serious public safety risk, a serious risk to any endangered or threatened species that might share that habitat. The risk is enormous.
So are traps then, Jessica, I've read that they are selective in that they're designed to catch certain kinds of animals. Is that, in fact, what is happening?
I think to say that traps are selective would be extremely misleading. There are some steps that trappers can take, being very particular about the habitat that they're setting the trap in. How large the trap's jaw spread is will dictate what it can grab onto. But as Mary Catherine said a moment ago, traps set out for bobcats have caught dogs, have caught deer, have caught bald eagles. The traps are really indiscriminate. They're essentially just ticking time bombs sitting out there waiting for someone to fall into its grasp.
And how many animals are actually being caught and killed by trappers?
I actually have that. Last year, it was 4,400 that were reported by trappers. Trappers are supposed to tell the New Mexico Game and Fish what they trap. Coyotes are not part of that list, and coyotes, as we said, get trapped by the thousand by private trappers in New Mexico. The reported number has been as high as over 20,000 animals. And again, what determines that isn't a scientific need or population management. It's determined by the price the pelts bring. So it's like a gold rush.
So then what it sounds like you're saying is that the trappers are self-policing, in a sense.
Yes.
So you said that the trappers are supposed to report to the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish. But what then is the obligation of the Department of Game and Fish to proactively monitor trapping?
If you call them or if they suspect an infraction, a game warden will come check, but no one's looking over the shoulder of every individual trapper. They don't know where traps are set. They don't know how many are being set. The land agencies don't know where traps are being set. The only person who knows is the trapper who set them.
Jessica, do we know how much money is being brought into the Department of Game and Fish by trapping, I guess it would be the trapping licenses?
My understanding is that it's not a ton of money. Talking about just a couple of thousand trappers, trapping license fees, it occasionally varies based on species, but we're talking about just $20, $30.
It's $20 for a trapping license for an in-state person. They pay a $5 extra fee if they're going to trap on public land, or it's a habitat stamp fee. The out-of-state license is $345, but most trappers in New Mexico are in-state. So mm-hmm. with 2,000 trappers at $20 a license, we're talking maybe $40,000, which really doesn't even pay the salary of the person who's supposed to coordinate the program.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't, the law enforcement, the benefits, the infrastructure, it does not pay for itself. So if you look at it, it's really hunters who are the bulk of the license-buying public that on New Mexico Game and Fish, they're actually subsidizing trapping.
Jessica, are there any hunting organizations that have actually come out against trapping?
I know of...
It got really quiet there, didn't it?
I know of individual hunters
mm-hmm.
who strongly disagree with trapping. I think it can sometimes be hard to find sportsmen's organizations that will take that strong of a stance, because they have a diverse membership, as many organizations do. I think about my father, who, I grew up in northern Minnesota, and every winter was deer hunting season, and he would go and sit in his deer stand, and I learned about hunting culture in that area, and this feeling of trying to you know, not be wasteful, trying to be careful, trying to respect life, not cause as much suffering as you can. And then I talk to my dad about trapping, and he's appalled. You know, that doesn't, trapping does not fit in with his ethic of what real fair hunting is. So, you know, I've met a lot of individuals just like him here in New Mexico.
So, Mary Kay, what do we know about the kinds of injuries that wildlife actually experience when they're trapped?
When an animal gets trapped, when the leg is, you know, the jaw is slammed shut on a leg, the first thing I think is just, you know, wild animals are very sensitive to their environment, and they stress easily when they're touched. I mean, so the first thing that they do is begin, you know, they leap, they struggle, the shock of the surprise of what's going on, and actually a lot of injury can happen because of the struggle. So animals essentially are self-injuring themselves. They twist, they roll, which can break bones. That in its own right, it can dislocate joints, pull and tear ligaments. And then they start biting, and dogs do this too, they start biting at the trap. They can break their teeth. They get mouth injuries are really common. And then, you know, I just shudder to think of an animal. I mean, when our dogs get caught, if we're with them, we can get them out, you know, usually if there's help available, at the best in just a few minutes, at the worst maybe an hour or two. But animals languish for hours. Legally, they're allowed to languish for a day, but no one's really checking. It can be more than that. And, you know, then they begin to experience dehydration, hunger, frostbite, you know, because the blood circulation's cut off. Words fail me on what a horrible experience this must be for any creature.
So, and then the trapped wildlife, do they then experience a humane death after these hours, potentially days, of languishing in a trap?
There's no regulation on how the trapper is to kill the animal that is in the trap. Sometimes they just use a bullet to the brain, or sadly to the lungs, because it makes less blood, and the whole reason is the pelt. They don't want to mar that. And for that reason, sometimes they don't use a bullet. They'll use the catch pole that they're required to release non-target animals. It's like a pole with a rope on the end that can be tightened. And they'll use that to strangle the animal. They'll use a baseball bat and bludgeon the animal to death. You know, the thought of someone who could actually do this to a captured animal kind of gives me pause. I just don't know the mindset that could be so inured to another living being like that.
Jessica, what about animal cruelty laws? Wouldn't this violate New Mexico's animal cruelty laws?
As long as the trapping is taking place in accordance with trapping laws, then cruelty laws don't apply. Now, if something was done to an animal that was deemed sort of outside of commonly accepted trapping practices, maybe there would be a case to be made. I'm not aware of any charges in New Mexico that have been brought against a person for any sort of improper trapping. I don't know, Mary Catherine, if you have.
Yeah, no. I think one of the provisions of the animal cruelty law is that it does not apply to animals that are hunted or trapped, unfortunately. So no, there have not been any trappers held to account for that.
And I guess part of the challenge is that even if there was something on paper, there would be really no way of enforcing it?
Exactly.
Correct.
Okay, we are going to have to take a very brief station break. You're listening to an Animal Talk discussion with Jessica Johnson, Chief Legislative Officer for Animal Protection Voters and Animal Protection of New Mexico, and Mary Catherine Ray, Wildlife Chair of the Rio Grande Chapter of the Sierra Club. We will be right back. Welcome back to Animal Talk. Today we are talking about trapping, and we are about to get into looking at the policy and politics of trapping in New Mexico. Our guests today are Jessica Johnson, Chief Legislative Officer for Animal Protection Voters and Animal Protection of New Mexico, and Mary Catherine Ray, Wildlife Chair of the Rio Grande Chapter of the Sierra Club. So just in the first half of the program, we talked a bit about trapping, how it works, and the tremendous suffering that wildlife experiences by these traps and snares. And we looked at the animal cruelty laws, which apparently do not apply to wildlife. Let's look now at the actual regulations. How well is the practice of trapping regulated on paper, at least on paper? How is it regulated, and how does that differ from practice? Jessica?
My experience watching trapping regulations be enforced is that it's just extremely difficult to hold anyone accountable for any wrongdoing during that trapping process or the trapping practice. As we mentioned before, you know, I feel like so many times that we've heard stories about dogs getting caught in traps that were illegally placed too close to a trail, too close to a picnic area. There might be an attempt to follow up to find out who that individual was to hold them accountable, and then they don't have their name or ID number on the trap. And so then there's just a dead end to any kind of accountability.
And even when we do know, few instances where trappers do break the law and are cited, it's a misdemeanor. So the penalty is usually a small fine, around $100.
So essentially then, let's look, regulations are meaningless without enforcement. What do we know, what kind of documentation is there by Game and Fish of their efforts to monitor and actually enforce these regulations, and including the numbers of violators who are identified?
It's getting quiet because it's not very good. The only thing that Game and Fish requires of trappers is the report of how many animals and what kind they killed, and that's pretty much it. They don't, as far as I know, keep a database of infractions. I mean, if you do a document request for that information, they'll make an effort to gather it up for you, but it's not a lot. The document requests I've done, there's not a lot of people who are held to account for infractions. It is a practice where there's just not a lot of information. For instance, when the kill report that they turn in, they call it a harvest report, a word I hate, like we're picking peaches here when we're really killing bobcats. What they turn in, it does not have to include non-target species. So any bird or any other thing that besides a protected fur bearer, they don't have to tell us. They don't have to report the dogs that they catch. Even endangered species, like Mexican wolves, have been caught by traps, and that's generally not kept in a database.
And what about, if violators are not being criminally penalized for this, what about the redress that the public has, both either for themselves or their animals, who are injured by these traps? What sort of monetary compensation is available to them?
The group Born Free USA, I mean, it's a nonprofit outside of government, does have a fund to help people who suffer from veterinary and sometimes medical expenses. But the state of New Mexico offers exactly nothing.
Well, what about the people, the violators themselves? Are they being brought to justice?
No, they're not.
Okay, let's look at then how this came about and why it persists, the politics of trapping. First thing, what is the policymaking process for wildlife policy, including trapping policy in New Mexico? How open a process is that? Jessica?
Well, there's primarily two different paths. One is a regulatory path where the Department of Game and Fish will draft new rules and regulations, and the State Game Commission has authority to approve, amend, reject those rules. So, for instance, just over the summer of 2015, the State Game Commission approved a new cougar trapping season for the first time in almost 50 years since cougars were first granted any kind of protection in our state. And they did so, you know, either ignoring or misinterpreting the best available science as far as cougar population in our state. But so that's a process where as the agency is going through the rulemaking process, there is public notice of the proposed rule. The public is able to attend hearings and submit either written or oral testimony. Our experience over the last couple of decades is that the Game Commission is not particularly responsive to what the general public says and asks for in those hearings, but it is an opportunity for folks to get involved and speak out. The second path is the legislative path, which is one that Animal Protection Voters and Sierra Club and many other organizations who have come together to form the Trap Free New Mexico Coalition. We're working on legislation to prohibit traps and poisons from public lands, with poisons, that being a similar situation where we're talking about indiscriminate, hidden, deadly things on our public lands that can impact not only the wild animals that we care about, but also ourselves and our companion animals. So with that process, it's up to state legislators. So, you know, of course, we as constituents and voters have a chance to make our voice heard during the election season to try to elect legislators who will support common sense, humane, and proper wildlife management legislation. And then the state legislative session will start on January 17th for a 60-day session. And so constituents, I hope everyone will call up their state senator and call up their state representative and talk to them about this issue and ask them to support this bill, to champion this bill to ban traps from public lands.
So, Jessica, what it sounds like you're saying, if I'm hearing you, is that the Game Commission is really a pretty impermeable decision-making body, that it's...
I think particularly with the issue of trapping, I don't see, I would never want to count anyone out, but just based on our efforts over the last couple of years on the cougar trapping issue, there doesn't seem to be a willingness to budge on that and to really hear people's legitimate concerns.
And Jessica, I hope you'll come back to the program just to focus on the cougar trapping issue.
Of course.
Great. So what do we know about, Mary Kate, you live outside of Santa Fe. I believe you live in sort of a rural part of the state. Is that right?
I live in southwest Socorro County, just outside the Gila, which unfortunately is the land of traps.
What is your experience in talking to folks who are neighbors or who live in the county about this trapping issue?
Surprisingly, I know people who, in the Magdalena area, who are horrified by this. I mean, their dogs have been caught, and it's as bad an experience for them as for people who live in Santa Fe. But, you know, there's also the mix of the people who our neighbors are setting those traps, too. There is a social pressure to conform to, you know, quote, the cowboy way. And people tend not to want to upset that boat Neighbors depend on each other out here, and there is a reluctance for people to be public about their opposition to traps, because it would mean, in a way, condemning our neighbors, the people that we depend on. So it's a little harder, but when we poll, we did a poll for this about 10 years ago, when not as many people knew about it, when pelt prices, not as many people had experiences with traps because pelt prices were low. And we found that even in rural areas, when you poll them in the privacy of their own home on the phone, it's still significant. Opposition to traps is.
Okay, well, I think we are going to have to close the interview now. Just very quickly, Jessica, how can people learn more about APNM?
Please visit Animal Protection Voters' website, www.apvnm.org. Find out about the issues that we're working on. Come to our Citizen Lobby Day during the session. We'd love to have you be a part of our efforts.
Okay, and Mary Catherine, how can people learn about the Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club?
We have a website, riograndesierraclub.org, and also trapfreenm.org has everything you want to know about traps.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.